Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast from The Sober Club. I'm Genuinely Grace. So good to have you on board. Had some lovely messages this week from people who have found the podcast and have just started out on their sober journey, or a couple of people just saying thank you for spreading the word, and it's the first time they'd ever realised there's a whole sober community. And God, it just makes me remember back to what it was like for me, you know, 6.5 years ago when I, you know, the light finally came on and I realized, wow, you can make this choice. And there's a whole community of people. There's a whole sober world out there. It's just really magical when you finally realize. And the whole approach that we take of positive sobriety, you know, I had another message from someone who was feeling so down and desperate about everything, terrified of failure, really nervous of slipping up. And I just, you know, had to remind her, come and join us in the Sober Club. Come and meet like-minded people who really, really focus on everything they're gaining, because, you know, there's nothing to lose and everything to gain. I did put a message on our Sober Club group the other day asking members, and don't forget we've got members in the Sober Club who are day one and thinking about ditching the booze, right through to people who've been sober for 13 years, because it's, you know, it's all about the what next, isn't it? And I just posted a little message saying, what have been the biggest changes for you? What's the biggest change that you've seen in yourself since you quit booze? And I just thought I'd read you a few of these, because they're just so lovely. It's just so fantastic to read these things. So here's a few of them. One woman said, I love myself, and seeing me evolving and changing every day is without doubt the best thing. Someone else on a similar note said, I actually like myself. Plus, my self-compassion has blossomed. Another one was an increased sense of peace, clarity and contentment, amongst many, many other things. And then someone wrote a slightly longer message. She said, how much easier it is to see things clearly, to make decisions and respond rationally to anything that life dispenses at any given moment. And the fact that I don't feel guilty. If I make a mistake, I know it was me, so I'm not ashamed. I like myself now. I'm genuinely a much nicer person to be around. Of course, I still get crabby, but not close to the same scale. Oh, and I don't need antidepressants anymore either. And I'm still early days. How fantastic is that? Another one said, anxiety is reduced massively. My mental health has improved 100%. I don't feel scared about things. Another one said, I feel at peace with myself, far less anxiety. Going to bed, falling asleep almost immediately, staying asleep. Great sleep, waking up, remembering everything was another one. Knowing I'm so much more present as a parent, being able to set boundaries without feeling guilty. I know I'm now empowered to go after my dreams. That's a fabulous one. And then another one said, my personal bravery, misguided or otherwise, it's the big in me that's coming out. And there's a fire in my belly. Oh, and I'm going to be doing sober coach training. That's the proverbial icing on the cake. Hugely excited. Aren't they just fantastic? Just a little tiny snapshot into how wonderful life can be when you ditch the booze. Really just so inspiring. Need to be able to bottle all of that, don't we? And sell it or give it away, which is what we're trying to do. We're trying to just share this message that you don't have to wait till you get to rock bottom. Just make your choice now and step off the booze elevator. And don't forget, you can join us in the Sober Club. I really hope you'll look at it if you haven't already. It's very low cost. It's very high value. And of course, if you want further extra support, I do offer one-to-one coaching as well. Just a quick mention of some of our events coming up. I told you I put some more in place. And so we have Sunday, June 16th, Family Constellations in Hertfordshire. If there's interest, we'll put an online one on before that, if there are people in other countries who want to do our constellations work. But Sunday, June 16th in Hertfordshire is the next one. The day before, Saturday the 15th, if there's interest, I'll do another vision board day. So let me know if that's something that you would like to do. And then online on June the 19th, Wednesday, June the 19th, this isn't for everyone, but just to mention it here in case anyone is interested, I've got another complimentary webinar, What Does It Mean to Be a Sober Coach? So that's for you if you've been thinking about possibly training to be a holistic sober coach, then my next training course starts in October. And so this is a webinar which will just, it's absolutely not a sell. No way is it, am I trying to sell this, because it's a tiny group and I only want people for whom the energy is exactly right. But this just gives you an insight into the world of sober coaching and also whether, if you're not in the UK, how you can take this program virtually as well. So that's on June the 19th. And then moving ahead to the 2nd of July, which is a Tuesday, Tuesday the 2nd of July, that's going to be our next Alcohol Free Life podcast meetup and Sober Club event. And I'll be revealing a bit more info about that very soon. Got very special guests lined up. And I'll reveal that soon. So all those events, when they're ready to buy tickets, will be at thesoberclub.com/events. So I really hope you can join us for one or more of those. It'd be absolutely fantastic to have you with us. Well, every now and then on this podcast, I love getting to know the people behind the brand. And I came across these absolutely gorgeous alcohol-free drinks. I mean, if nothing else, the packaging is just beautiful. I thought, I have to find out more about the founder. And of course, she has a fascinating story herself, as is often the case. People who have their own story want to do something exciting with it all. So, welcome to the podcast, Colette Saphill. How are you doing?
Hi, thank you for having me, Janie.
Oh, it's lovely to chat to you. So we're going to talk a bit more about Myth, the lovely Myth drinks in their gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous bottles. But let's just talk about you. Tell me a bit about your story. What got all this going for you? Take me right back to when you were in your drinking days.
All right. Well, mine actually, my drinking days started before my drinking days. They started with someone else's. So when I was a child, my mother was alcoholic, and unfortunately, she died when I was young. I would now say she died from untreated alcoholism, although that came out as suicide.
Oh, wow.
So I had an astonishingly difficult childhood because I didn't live with her because of her drinking, and then I did, and then I didn't, and then I didn't because she died, and it was just a very disrupted way to be raised, with a very kind of otherness, you know. So, and I think as a child, you don't really know it's the big things. It's little things like coming home from school and having someone there to make you a drink, or having a really soft towel after swimming. I can always remember the girls who had like really nice towels after swimming and socks.
Was your dad around at the time?
Yes and no. That was a bit of a stutter, wasn't it? So my parents divorced when I was very, very young. I was a baby, actually. And my father got custody of me, which back in those days was unheard of, and it's to the troubles my mother had. My father lived in Essex, hence my accent. My mother lived in Barnsley. So I lived between the two of them. But after my mother died, I did go back down south, but it sort of didn't work out for me for lots of reasons. So I had a really, after she died, I had a really disruptive time. And it was just a very, it was just very difficult. The whole thing was, I think sometimes when we look back, we can talk about the really big things, but actually it was things like I had the wrong accent. I seemed to have a southern accent when I was living in the north and a northern accent when I was living in the south. And in the south, I was living kind of on a nice housing estate, went to a nice school. In the north, I moved to Barnsley right in the middle of the miners' strike. And just all of those things, you know, just not really belonging. I think that was probably the biggest thing, that not belonging, but for so many reasons, not having a friendship group, not having and not really forming attachments, because I knew that I wouldn't be able to keep them.
Yes, absolutely.
Probably more of it than the I'm always conscious of the really big ticket items, yeah, the ones that make good headlines, but that wasn't the crux of it. The crux of it was not belonging to a friendship group, not really having someone to write, I don't know, school notes because I wasn't well, or someone to notice I wasn't well, or those kind of things. That was the
Yeah, absolutely. So as you got into your sort of teenage years then, having seen what your mother went through, did that put you off starting to drink, or did it in fact sort of
I
send
did
you the
actually.
other way?
No,
Right.
it didn't. So I didn't really drink until I was at uni, to be fair. I did briefly around about my 18th, and I had the most awful 18th, and it was the result of the drink. And I just stopped. I didn't want to do that. I knew what it was. I didn't want to do it. And I didn't really start drinking heavily until I was probably about 20. I might be wrong, and I don't know if friends of mine from the time are listening and they're going, that's not true. Then it was quite hazy. But I certainly didn't drink in the years that other people drank, kind of 14 to 18, I didn't. Mm. And I drank briefly around my 18th, and then I stopped again and maybe picked up again when I was like late 19 when I went to uni. Mm. And then kind of got really good at it really, really quickly.
Mm. And when you say, you know, you were drinking too much then, what was your kind of thought process then? Did it not seem to connect with what had been going on with your mother? Because I find it, you know, I do find it interesting. Sometimes we, when it's ourselves, we just don't see it the same way. Or it's almost like, oh, well, she had a disease, but I don't, I'm okay, or I can have one. It's weird how we kind of justify it for ourselves, isn't it?
I think I knew. I think that I kind of gave myself permission. Mm. I was quite a different person than I am now. Very much kind of, you can't possibly understand how hard it is to be me, you know. Right. Possibly understand how difficult it has been. You would drink too if you were me.
Right.
You
know, yeah.
Overeat or do drugs or steal or, you know, all the things I didn't do. But I'm just going to do this.
Yeah. I get it.
I don't know if I held on at some idea that I could get control of it, but I certainly always knew. Mm. I always drank alcoholically right from the start.
Right, right.
Like other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What changed then? How long did that last?
It lasted until I was, how old am I now? 51. So it lasted until I was 28. And I was involved in a road traffic accident, which was my fault. And I was arrested. And because of that one thing, the things that kind of held my life together up until that point fell away a bit. Because I had a proper job, I was fully functioning. But my children went to my ex-husband's. I wasn't able to go to work because I was injured. When they let me out of the cells the next day after I sobered up enough to be interviewed, I went home and just drank solidly for, I'm going to say, 3 weeks.
Might have been
4 weeks. Mm. But I remember knowing that I was kind of descending really rapid. I can actually remember feeling it.
Yeah.
I remember feeling that I didn't know what was real and what wasn't. I didn't know what kind of day it was. I didn't know. My whole world became really small, really, really quickly. And I've spoken to people since who've lived in that phase for years.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But for me, it wasn't like that. I just got to one Sunday and thought, this is stupid. I need to pull myself together.
Yeah.
Pull myself together and went into the DTs, and I began hallucinating, and I was sectioned onto the mental health factor.
Oh, my God. Just very briefly, before we get to the way out of that, I'm just really interested in whether what should have been available for you then? What should have happened, you know, if we could wave a magic wand, even if it's for someone else, as it were, what should have happened then? Because that's just so horrific. You've already had enough trauma, and then to have to go through that, you know, some people, as you say, are stuck in that phase, never get free. What might have helped you then?
I suppose thinking back to my mother, you know, there was no help at that point for her at all. It was all shame. And for 23, 24 years ago, when I came through, there was still a lot of shame and secrecy.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, in really, really simple terms, what needed to happen was way earlier. And as a child, I needed to be cared for. That's the most simple thing. You know, you can't retrofit love. You just can't. And if you're a child and you are not loved and your needs are not met, that will always play out somewhere.
Absolutely, absolutely.
As an adult, but I had a proper job. I think that I worked at Barclays, actually. I think that my employer could have done a lot more. I was eventually just sacked. I was sacked for gross misconduct when I came out of treatment. I never did anything wrong. And actually, they were fine with that as long as I was still selling, because I was one of their top sellers, as most alcoholics know, overachiever. I think that the doctor could have helped, could have stepped in. But at every point that I that I went to, that I kind of met any kind of anyone who could have helped me, it always seemed punitive. It always seemed like I was going to be in trouble and I was going to lose more. So there was this secrecy and this kind of like desperate holding on. And actually, if I look back, you know, I had two children, a failed marriage, I had no family at all. Helped me, a full-time job, a house to run. This is before flexible working. And, you know, one of the kids is sick and I still need to be at work, but I'm going to have to be at work and I'm going to have to make it work. So just all those kind of pressures as well, without having a network of support. I come out of a violent situation. I would say that wasn't my first husband. That was a following relationship. And again, there was no support. There was no, the police were useless. So I was very, very scared. And interestingly, and I try not ever to make excuses for my drinking, but that is when my drinking ramped up. Because I couldn't sleep. I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified it was going to happen again. This guy was going to break in again. And I just couldn't get to sleep.
Wow.
So there were reasons, but it was already a path I was walking, I think.
Yeah. Wow, what a story. So you woke up and on that whatever that day was and just decided, right, that's enough.
Yeah, I literally just thought, that's enough. This has got to stop.
Wow. How long did it take for you to sort of get free then? Did you... You know, you said you were obviously you'd been at rock bottom. Did you have any kind of rehabilitation? Did you have any support with all of that?
Yeah, I was really fortunate. I had private healthcare through my work. It was, I don't know why I always tell people that work gave it to me. My dad paid for it. Neither of those are true. It was the salary sacrifice scheme that I paid for with AXA. Anyway, so I was initially sectioned under the Mental Health Act into the local NHS unit. Sectioned for my own safety, really, and I was hallucinating for quite a long time. I was in there for a week, apparently. I mean, I honestly don't know. I can't remember. And then I was moved from there to Priory, and I was moved to Priory in Southgate, and my insurance paid for it. Stayed there for some weeks, couldn't tell you how many, and I was still really chronic then. I was undernourished, and I was all the things that go with it, so it wasn't... Yeah. It wasn't the time to address my alcoholism. It was probably the time to try and keep body and soul together. And then I was moved to the Priory in Springfield, which is in Chelmsford, which is where I then stayed on and off. I think I was in there for... I left around the summer and I went in the October. But I stayed as an outpatient for a further year. And I took it really seriously. I've never had another drink, not one, not since that day. I go to AA, and there wasn't really anything other than that at the time.
No, of course. We forget sometimes just how much everything's changed, don't we? Thank goodness.
I know, because I've seen some appalling behaviours in AA, and it's not really a place that's safe for young women always. And there's lots of things about it, but, you know, some people are just dicks, and they're dicks whether they're drinking or not.
Yeah.
Some of these people are in AA. They're wives, aren't they? So, but that's what I did. I stepped away from... I've given some really good advice. Take one step away from anything that would take you a step closer to a drink. So that is what I did.
Yeah.
My friendship group. I even stopped smoking because smoking reminded me of drinking. I changed my job. I retrained. I had to change my job, got sacked. And actually, when I came out, it was harder because, you know, I faced a lot of people's opinion in the street.
Yeah, of course.
A lot of people had an opinion on me, particularly those still drinking. I wasn't able to pick around with my old mates anymore, you know, people, places and things. I still obviously don't have a family. I was trying to get my kids back. I was trying to build a new life. And there wasn't anything to hold me together. I felt really, really fragile and really empty.
Wow.
Dead, actually, most of the time.
Gosh, I mean, the stigma around... It's just incredible, really, isn't it, when you think about it, that, you know, alcohol is legal. Not only is it legal, it's practically forced on you. It's, you know, as you know, that's lovely saying, it's the only drug we have to justify not taking. You know, it's true. It's practically forced on us, you know, but when you add that to the all the layers of trauma and family trauma and abuse and God knows what else, and then all of a sudden, if, you know, something tips up and this addictive substance, you know, is layered on top of all of that stuff and you're not handling it very well, suddenly it's your fault. entirely. Not the fault of the addictive, hideous liquid that should never have been, you know, on the market. But suddenly it's your fault. And the stigma around that, God, must have been very difficult for you.
It becomes dispositional, not situational. It just becomes about person, not about environment. You know, I mean, yeah. I personally believe that alcohol is a gendered weapon. I think it's kind of pointed and aimed at women. I was in the shop the other day. I've got three daughters and a son. And I was in the shop the other day, and my youngest daughter's 13. And there was this glass, and it was the size of a goldfish bowl, Jamie. And on the side of it, it said, Mummy's Prosecco.
Oh, for God's sake.
And I just thought, since when was that okay? What's that telling my daughter? And I see like on the telly sometimes, you see like the adverts with all the mummies in their nice clothes, and they've all got a bottle of bubbly on. And what that's telling you, what that narrative is telling you, is they're all okay with it. So if you're not, that's your problem.
Yeah, exactly. And that whole message that, you know, women can't possibly cope without, you know, their glamorous attachment of a glass of wine. You know, how else are you going to deal with young kids? And oh my God, I know. On and on.
Vulnerable. That's the thing. It makes us vulnerable. And who's the stakeholder in that? Who's the stakeholder in preventing women speaking and preventing women speaking to each other and being powerful and owning their own space and having agency, you know, owning our bodies and owning our metaphysical space?
Yeah.
And I see it, and I see it everywhere, because nobody likes a drunk mother at the school gate.
Well, absolutely. And, you know,
including me. I mean, I'll be really honest.
Yeah, no, totally.
If I met myself then, now, I'd take a sidestep. Absolutely. I'd kind of pull my kids away a bit and know my kids can't play with your kids. Absolutely. But where do you go for help that you're not going to lose more than you've already lost?
Well, one of the problems, you know, is that, as you say, the you know, look at who has a stakeholder in all of this. So I've often said on this podcast that, you know, the alcohol industry are so good at their marketing. It's so brilliantly done. It's so linked to everything glamorous. You know, every single, you know, celebrations, commiserations, everything in between, the school gates, the play dates, the everything, you know, the Mother's Day, the Christmas, whatever it might be. But we never see any images or footage of someone like you in a prison cell, right? Or someone in the gutter. Yeah. They don't show that bit, do they? They don't show what actually happens when we imbibe their toxic liquid. Well, so they're not actually seeing it all the way through.
Or a young child trying to wake their mother up who's dead.
Yeah. For God's sake.
Those kind of things. I saw something the other day, actually, Janie, and it was a thread on LinkedIn about our alcohol-free spirits now leading children to normalise drinking. And at the same time, I read an article about how Sprite have partnered, I think, with a vodka, with one of the
God.
Create an alcoholic Sprite that's still branded Sprite. Now,
wow.
Conversation not the wrong way around.
No, 100% is.
Yeah,
100%
would. And I don't know how many conversations I have all the time about this. I say to people, I don't need to change your mind, that's fine, but I'm not wrong.
Absolutely. And I mean when I, you know, it's not all that long ago, is it, that maybe it is quite a long time ago when I was young, that there were those Alco Pops. Do you remember Alco Pops? Oh my God.
Hooch and was it two dogs the other
terrible
one?
Bloody gateway, awful things. Yeah. Anyways, what an amazing story. And look at you, in a completely different person, literally. How amazing for you to, you must feel literally like you've got a second chance at life.
Yeah, I remarried. People think I made this up. I did not make this up, okay? So in the greatest love story ever told, Andy, on Manning Tree train station. He's a businessman and he drank like any businessman drinks. I absolutely adore him. I really do. But when he asked me to marry him, I just said, look, I really love you, but no, because I can't. I made a decision never to have alcohol in my house, including if it was in someone. So I was like, look, I'll carry on seeing you. I'm fine with that. And I'm still putting my life back together. But I'm not marrying you. So he said, oh, well, I just won't have another drink. So he never did.
Brilliant.
And people often say to Andy, they'll say, what, you gave up alcohol for Colette? And you
go, no, I gained myself and a fabulous relationship.
You wouldn't give up alcohol for your wife. Now, that's an interesting conversation you might want to have with yourself.
Isn't it?
Amazing how many, and Andy's quite offended by it. He's like, I'm reasonably sure Colette's worth more than a pint of lager. He doesn't look at me some days like he's not sure.
Oh, brilliant. I mean, you did him a fabulous favour, right? How wonderful.
Yeah, he's the same. And we've gone on to have two more children. So obviously I've got my eldest two who are much older now, sort of 30 and 28. And I've got my two youngest who are 13 and 14. And we live in North Yorkshire. So I've still not got the right accent.
So after that amazing story then, what encouraged you, what inspired you to start, you know, to start your brand, to launch Myth?
That's a really good question. I was out with Andy, so I work as a therapist, not specifically addiction, not all kind of empowerment type things. I support my husband's business as well, and obviously I've got the children. We've been out somewhere, someone had offered me a pint of Fanta in a plastic cup, and it would happen, you know, about 5 years ago now. And I was just like, oh, come on, how hard could it be just to make a drink? How hard could it be? I can answer that. Really, 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 really hard, if anyone's interested. And Andy went, oh, well, go on then, make one. So that was it. There wasn't any more thought to it than that. I've never worked in that area before. I've got no experience, got no contacts. And I didn't even know what I was going to make because it had been years since I've had a drink. I don't hang around bars and places like that. I don't drink soft drinks. I don't drink alcohol. So.
Yeah, yeah. Was it around the time when you were there lots of other alcohol-free drinks already around, or was it before that? Were you kind of one of the first?
I was one of the first. Well, Seedlip had just come out.
Oh, right. Okay. Oh, a long time ago, yeah.
So I had a couple of goes at making things, but it didn't really work out. Mm-hmm. And then I had a personal issue. My father was dying, and it was one of those real kind of moments I had to make a decision, and had to make the decision that I would go down south and look after him while he was dying, even though he hadn't really cared for me as a child, because I needed to be better than that. I needed to break that cycle.
Yeah.
So I went down south, and I was down there for nearly 6 months. So everything else was put on hold. When I came back to a pandemic. So the children were home from school, Andy was home from work, I was home, the dogs looking at us like, what's happening here? And then after the girls had gone back to school, it was at that point, so 2 years ago, that I just went, okay, I'm going to have another go at this. And actually, in the intervening time, quite a few more things had come to market.
Yeah.
There was a definite space then, and I had a better idea of what I was doing.
Great. So just tell us a bit about Myth drinks then, because they're, you tell me. I mean, they're really unusual, and as I've already said, beautiful packaging. I mean, I don't know how you made that decision, but I'm very glad you did, because, you know, who doesn't want a beautiful bottle on the shelf?
Well, my friend Gemma wants to go and move to Miami Beach, and apparently that's what the buildings look like. So she's a graphic artist, and that's what she drew. When I came back to it again, I had a much clearer view of what I wanted to do. And for me, I felt that I didn't want the sector to feel quite so virtuous and worthy, because although I don't drink alcohol, you know, I'm not vegetarian. I don't particularly knit my own shoes. I haven't got a chicken. I don't, you know, I'm not that person. But I just don't drink alcohol. So I wanted to make something that was a bit more fun than that. So for me, I made Malibu, just an alcohol-free Malibu equivalent. Now, obviously, I didn't go and try Malibu to find out. So I sort of made a memory, I think. Mm-hmm. So I made the light one, and the dark one is more like a Kraken, I guess. And I didn't want it to have adaptogens or nootropics or anything like that. I wanted it to be a straight-out swap. So if your bartender's going to do you a rum and coke, he can use the dark and coke. If someone's going to make you a... I don't know, Malibu and pineapple, he can use the white and pineapple. Nothing, you know, there was nothing harder than that to it.
Right. So some alcohol-free drinks start life with some alcohol that's then taken out, but you didn't do that. No. Just simply used different flavour profiles.
Yeah, different distillates and things. So there's no alcohol in the drink, in me, in the money, in the business, doesn't anywhere in the chain.
It's brilliant. Free. How amazing.
Then I made a couple of RTDs as well to go with, so a couple of ready-made cocktails, sober sundowners. But it was
great. So you mean, so we can buy them in the lovely bottles, or they're also ready to go in cans? Yeah, yeah. Fantastic.
And a lot of it was, for me, it was about it being beautiful. You know, my own experience of childhood was not beautiful.
Yeah.
My own experience of young adulthood was not beautiful. My experience of rehab was very not beautiful. But then I found when I stopped drinking, I kind of still wasn't exactly welcome. There was still nothing beautiful for me. And that's what I wanted. I wanted, you know, my good dress, a good lipstick and all of that, and something beautiful in a glass that made me feel included. And I think that is harking back to my childhood, you know, not belonging, not feeling included, being made to feel less than.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, as I'm saying all the goddamn time, you know, I think a cup of tea often doesn't cut it. You know, we're adults, we like a nice glass and we like that celebratory feeling. And why not? That's absolutely great. But you don't have to have poison. You know, you can absolutely have a lovely glass of what's your one, the sour sober sundowner. What a great name.
Yeah. It's like a mid sour, it's like a dark sour.
Yeah.
And again, but I wanted it not to be full of E numbers, because I looked
totally
at some and they were full of, so I have got potassium sorbate, I think I'm using at the moment, just so it doesn't go off when you open it. Mm-hmm. That's in the bottle, but in the can there's nothing. There's mm-hmm. no artificial colours, flavours, preservatives. There's nothing in there. Everything in there is natural. Everything in my bottles is natural, except for that one small preservative.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I've got the Free From Food Awards. I've got the Great Taste Awards. I've got the International Wine and Spirits Trophy. I've got the World Alcohol Free Trophy.
That's so great.
Because I've really paid attention to what I put in that bottle and what I put in myself. You know, I'm not in my 20s anymore. I need a bit more care than that.
Yeah. Well, you know, as you say, that you know, it really is a transformation story, isn't it, yours? It really is. And now, you know, as you say, you bring back something beautiful into your life. And it all comes back to that, to now you can actually like and love and respect yourself now. And that's a really beautiful thing. What an amazing story. It really is. So what would you like to see happen? You know, what are your sort of hopes for the brand moving forward?
Good question. So I guess because I didn't know the business, I've been a bit surprised by the business of the business, and not necessarily in a good way. It's easy. I sell most of my product to North America and Canada, about 90% of it, actually.
Why is that then? How come you don't sell as much in the UK?
I don't know. I'm in my second year of trading.
Would you like to be in sort of bars in the UK? And yeah, okay. I mean, there really needs to be there still does need to be so much more choice available. It still is the case that in most bars, you know, you can get an alcohol-free beer and not much else. Usually there might be a seed lip or something, but there often isn't a lot else. It really is time for a change.
I think it's to do with who owns the distribution.
Yes. Yes.
A lot of them are Diageo fund. Now, and a lot of like Gordon Zero and things like Gordon Zero, you know, it's the same bloody bottle, Janie.
Yes, it is.
Buy alcohol where you can't have it normally.
Well, also, you know, if you do buy, you know, a lot of the big brands who also do a low or no alcohol version, they also, if you buy a pre-mixed can, they have, I just cannot believe the artificial sweeteners and absolute rubbish in there. You know, I spend my life trying to kind of encourage sober club members. Okay, you know, try some alcohol-free drinks. Oh, but be really careful. You can't have that tonic water, and you can't have that, and you can't have the one from M&S, and you can't have this because it's got a load of crap in it.
People say to me sometimes that my white one's high in sugar. It's not. Because it's a 25ml serve. By the time you've made it into a long glass, the drink itself, the spirit itself's got 24 calories in it. So it can't have that much sugar, can it? Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, you wouldn't just drink it out of a bottle. But I think the low alcohol, the no low light alcohol sector is now very confused, because light is a half strength spirit. Well, a 20% spirit is still going to get you pissed, you know? Mm. So that shouldn't be in the same conversation as sober.
What you mean when you buy the low alcohol drinks that are like 0.8% or something crazy?
Well, there's a new sector now called light. So there's no low and light. So low is supposed to be under 0.5.
That's right, yeah.
Actually, no is under 0.5.
Yeah, yeah.
Low is now up to 3, but light is a half strength, whatever the actual strength would have been. So, like,
oh, God, I didn't even know that. Oh, my goodness, that's so confusing.
That conversation isn't happening in the space of alcohol. It's not happening in the space of reducing alcohol. It's happening in the space of alcohol-free. So even in the space of alcohol-free now, a lot of the producers, the places we can sell are saying, yeah, but what about light as well?
So am I right in thinking then? So there was an alcohol-free, in inverted commas, gin a while ago that I was looking at, and it was 1.2.
Yeah.
I mean, how confusing is that? What would be the point? Utterly crazy. If you're not drinking, don't confuse yourself, right?
But I'm talking about products that are 20%.
20%? That's crazy. How can that be classed as light?
it's like
Oh, wow.
what it's like for the sector. So I can't, so my daughter, for example, my 15-year-old Celia. Okay, so if I go to the shop to get her something gluten-free, it doesn't say I'm a bit gluten-free. It doesn't
No.
mix the gluten-free with the half gluten. If
Exactly.
you've got a peanut allergy, it almost gives you half a peanut, you've still got a problem, you know? It's,
Totally.
I can't think of any other bit of food and drink where someone makes a choice for whatever reason, and then executing that choice is made so difficult.
No, absolutely.
In America, it's much easier. And actually, in America, my sober story seems to stand me well. But in the UK, I think the fact that I'm sober is a problem, actually. In fact, I'm sober and I'm so vocal about my view on alcohol because we're selling through the same channels.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Nobody wants to take mine.
Oh God, well, I really hope that changes because it's crazy. It's everything about your brand is completely positive, and the fact that you really have come through this. I mean, what an amazing inspirational story. Why would you want to come through something like that, have an amazing inspirational story, and then try and encourage people to drink, for God's sake?
I know. It doesn't make
Oh
sense to me,
wow.
but America seems to, it seems to just be different in it.
That's really interesting.
Okay.
And
Because I
yet,
haven't got a distributor there, I just do it myself,
ah,
basically.
because I was going to say, in some of the conversations I've had, it seems that the UK is ahead of the States when it comes to alcohol-free drinks. I mean, unusually, often they're ahead of us, but we've got far more choice of alcohol-free drinks in the UK.
We have. Well, we have a lot more startups, a lot more people beginning, but a lot, I think we've got quite a lot closing as well because they
Right.
just get traction. But I've been doing this 2 years now. I've got no funding, no backing, and no team. So you have to wonder how long that's sustainable. But I think, it's easier for me to sell to New York than it is York, and I live 15 minutes away.
Wow,
It's
that is really
yeah.
interesting.
Just
Wow.
can't get anything on the bars at all, or in the shops, or. So I
Wow.
don't know how that will play out longer term, and I don't know if some of it is because the spirits don't have a context to live in, whereas everyone knows beer, everyone knows wine, but the spirits, I think they're a bit different, and maybe the sector needs a bit more context and a bit more history. And
Yeah.
then also this awful snobbery thing coming in about how there's a whole rhetoric about how AF needs to have it like be novel and adaptogen and zoetropic and all sorts of things. And so actually, I don't want my drink to change my state of mind. I don't want it because it either does do something, then it should have a warning, or it doesn't do
Yeah.
something, it should say that as well.
Yeah.
It's just a drink.
Yeah, exactly.
About being included and not being excluded, but for me,
Yeah,
I think one of
sure.
my lines is just see the sunset and the sun up, and that's the truth.
Yeah, lovely. Oh,
It's
absolutely. I love that.
there.
Love that. Just remind us where we can buy the products then. Just can we buy them online directly from you?
Yeah, best
Yeah.
on my website. We do have stockists, and on my website there's a list of stockists, but nearly all of them are in North America and Canada. So
Okay.
yeah, straight from me. There are some alcohol-free specialists now. I think there's the Alcohol-Free Company. There's Wise Bartender. So there are a few, but all of them are on my website. So you're best.
Okay, great.
Or
And
find
also,
me on Insta.
yeah, okay, absolutely, yeah. Myth drinks, right. Thank you so much, Colette. It's such a fascinating story, and it's so great that you're willing to share it, so openly, because there will be people who have had, something similar in their life, and they still can't even open up about it. It's so difficult. They can't even voice it. So
It has been difficult. It was my
yeah.
biggest fear when I launched the drinks, actually, was could I say it out loud?
Yeah, yeah.
How would people respond? And I listened to some people's stories, which were a bit put down the Chardonnay and pick up a tennis racket, and mine just wasn't that.
No, exactly. And I think, I think you and I have probably had this conversation separately, but I work with family constellations. I know you work as a therapist, and I work with family constellations, and it's really so fascinating when you see the way trauma plays out, whether that's big T, little T, and you see how it plays out in people's lives, and the high percentage of people that end up with addictions and stuff going down, and we get to this point where we recognize we can't go back and change that, unfortunately. I so wish we could, but we can't. What we can do is we recognize we don't have to stay stuck. And what you've done is just literally create something beautiful. And so,
That was the idea,
it's really
basically.
impressive. It's really, really great to hear your story. And thank you so much for sharing. I think people will be really touched by it. And there will be people, I'm sure, who are thinking, oh my goodness, maybe I'd be brave enough to even if it's just to recognize that they don't have to stay stuck either, right? So,
and it is easier. Someone said to me once, you know, that the hardest day sober was still easier than the hardest day drunk.
God, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it's so true. Sometimes sober club members, they'll be quite early on in their sobriety, and then they'll sort of write a post saying, I'm really not feeling good. I haven't slept. I don't feel great. I'm really upset about something. I'm feeling really down. And you know, the sort of underlying question is, should I go back to drinking? And everyone kind of in a very nice, non-judgmental way finds a way of saying, no, you know, you had shit days when you were sober too. In fact, massively shit ones. You know, it's called life, actually. Not every day is fabulous. It's called life. Push through it, right? Feel the feels and push through.
And I think just being able to have agency over yourself, you know, knowing that, one of the things I hated when I was drinking was people could tell me what I'd done.
Yes, God, yeah.
100% say I hadn't.
Kind of being on the back foot. I hated that too.
Did I do that? Oh my God, it doesn't sound like I would. But and now it's one of the things that everyone knows I can be quite savage about. If someone says, "Oh, you did this," I go, "No, I didn't."
Absolutely. You find your memory is very good.
My memory is very good. You may have misunderstood me. That's a different question, but that's not what I said. And that's for me, that's the biggest thing. Or like my kids, you know, if I tell my kids we're going to do something, then we're going to do it.
It for sure makes you a better parent, doesn't it? It really does. God, you're so much more present, much more able to set boundaries, but also have a bit of fun. You know?
Yeah, and it's not all reactive, is it? It's not always covering up. And a better marriage. And yeah, I'm a much better wife, I'm a better mother, I'm a better friend. I take my friendships really, really seriously. I've been so lucky, really lucky to have kind of best friends that I've made they're not sober people, they are sober actually, but not same sober community. But to find really close friendships, particularly, you know, when you're not teenage and 20s, and for them to be really enduring friendships, that's been amazing as well.
Yeah, brilliant.
It's all of that serious.
Totally. Colette, thank you
sometimes.
Sorry, say again.
I still be a bit of a dick sometimes.
It's life. Thanks ever so much, Colette. I really appreciate it. We'll put all that info in the show notes. And also we've got a great competition on the You've Entered Our Platinum Awards. A really fantastic competition. Thank you for offering us that. I'll put details of that as well. Thanks a lot.
Take care.
So it's mythdrinks.co.uk. And if you go to imperfectlynatural.com, that's my other website, you know, where I wear my other natural living hat, you'll find there a competition to win a really great bundle of stuff from Myth Drinks. If you want to check out all their beautiful, colourful branding and packaging, then go to imperfectlynatural.com and click on competitions, and there's a chance to win a bundle there. Or you can just go direct to their website, mythdrinks.co.uk, if you'd like to buy some. And of course, you can also vote for them in the Platinum Awards. So you can nominate them in the awards. There's a little button there. And I'll put all of this in the show notes from this episode as well. So just a reminder, you know, we did touch on it there in that interview with Colette, that when you've got stuff from your past, and you know, so many people are carrying really, really heavy stuff, one of the most wonderful ways to move on, to be able to honor what's happened but move on, is through family constellations. It's incredibly powerful work. And if you can join us for our next one, it's Sunday 16th of June in Hertfordshire. It would be amazing to see you there. Have a look at some of the testimonials. That's really the best way I can kind of encourage you to think about it, because it's quite tricky to explain. You just have to kind of trust and read some of the testimonials. There's some nice ones on the page now. So have a look at Family Constellations on Sunday 16th of June, and pop those other dates that I mentioned in your diary as well. Feel free to message me if you've got something going on. Always, always, always reach out. I know not everyone wants to join us in the Sober Club. Not everyone wants to connect with others, although I highly recommend it. But either way around, just reach out and let someone know that you're doing this, because if it's just you and the voice in your head, then, you know, chances of you succeeding are not terribly high. You need to get some love bombing. You need to get some accountability and some inspiration. So check out thesoberclub.com, or just pop me a message. I will respond to as many messages as I possibly can. Just follow me on social media at Janie Lee Grace on Instagram and Facebook and wherever else. That's the name everywhere. And I will respond if I can, but always reach out. If you're doing this hard thing, reach out. Promise me you'll do that. Oh, and by the way, I forgot to say, you can hear me being interviewed. I'm on the other side of the mic on the Reset podcast with Sam Delaney. He was actually one of my guests quite a while back. Really fun guy, and he interviewed me for the Reset podcast. So I'll pop the link to that as well in case that's something that you're interested in. And I'll see you next time. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by the Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability, and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.